In Defense of Food, it's a popular book that's been on the New York Times bestseller list for quite a while. Jeff gave it a read and has a review for us. Also, three email questions and answers that include some clips from the Oprah Winfrey Show. All this and more on episode number 54 of Fat to Fit Radio.
Welcome to Fat to Fit Radio, your source for real weight loss solutions without the hype. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Ainsley and Russ Turley.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to show number 54. What's up with you this week, Jeff?
Actually, I just got back from the gym, so I'm feeling pretty good. But the crazy thing about the gym right now, you know, this is the third week into January. It is absolutely packed. Ever since the New Year's, it is just busy lineups and all the equipment. I guess I just have to live through the next couple of weeks, and most of those people will kind of fade out like they do every single year. But let's move right into the new section, Keeping It Real, to find out how you're doing, Russ. You have some big goals this year. Last week, you were at about 248 pounds. How are you doing this week?
Well, this week, I lost about a pound, a little over a pound, weighing in at 247.1, you know.
Well, that is excellent because you are just under 3 pounds. It's 3 weeks in, and your goal is 50 pounds this year, and you will hit it if you keep this up. It's only a pound a week that you have to hit. It's only 500 calories less per day in eating or a combination of eating and exercise to hit this 50-pound weight loss goal. So first of all, how has your eating been this week?
You know, it's interesting. I have been eating the same amount of calories and really kind of maintaining that six meals, always getting that snack in and really trying to just eat right at my calorie goal. And actually, I'm finding it hard to eat as many calories as I want to. And so, I've been finding I need to raise my level of number of calories in protein or in just trying to eat more vegetables, which is really hard to do to get up the calories up. So as far as eating wise, 10 out of 10 there, I am right at my goal or under. I'm trying not to go too far under because I don't want to stall the weight loss at all by starving myself. But I haven't felt hungry one time in the last week. It's been great.
Well, that's awesome. Last week you said your exercise wasn't so great. Did you improve for this week?
I did improve this week, not because I still haven't fixed my machine. I got to get a part of some kind, and I have no idea where to get it for the elliptical. But I did lift some weights this week, about a 6 out of 10 this week with not getting to do the elliptical, but still pretty good.
And I guess the last thing, how's your motivation?
Motivation? Oh, excellent. Here in July, we talked about it last week, that I have my 20-year reunion coming up in, now it's less than 6 months. And I got the invitation. I actually paid money, $86. For my wife and myself to go to our 20-year reunion. We've got to get down. I got to hit that 225 mark at least by July 15th. That's my ultimate goal here, at least for, you know, the 6 months. I got to get down to that point. And that letter just revved me up, and I'm ready to do it now.
Well, that's awesome. As long as you have something that's going to keep you motivated day after day, that's all it takes. You know, eating your six meals a day and never being hungry and exercising and having a real good goal to strive for, that's going to be a total success this year. But let's move into our email and comment section for the week. And our first email comes in from Jillian.
Yep, she wrote, "Hi guys, I love the show. You mentioned on an earlier show about how Oprah has a cook and a private trainer, but she still manages to fight her weight. With all her money and media empire, do you know what she is planning to do to lose weight this time around?"
We actually found a really good video clip where Oprah talks all about her training plan. So what we're going to do is play some audio clips from here, and then we're going to discuss how she's doing. So here's the first clip.
"Is you have to plan. You have to plan for your life. You really have to plan for your meals. So this is my schedule of meals. So now instead of having like one great big meal at the end of the day or snacking all through the day, I have scheduled meals that I plan out every week and generally just repeat them. I love oatmeal, steel cut oatmeal with egg whites, not with the egg whites in the oatmeal, but on the side, and a green drink. You can go to Oprah.com and we'll show you what that green drink is. Then I alternate between salmon or a grilled chicken breast. Some days I do tuna. Then other days I will do turkey meatballs that I make all together on Sunday. You make these turkey meatballs, recipe on Oprah.com."
Well, first of all, I want to say that she finally has some really good advice from her trainer, nutritionist, whatever she has, because she's really following all of the advice that we've talked about. She's planning all of her meals in advance. She's trying to get them cooked in advance. her menu, and if you see the video, you can kind of see little bits and snippets of her actual menu. She's eating a lean protein with every meal. She's having some vegetables with every single meal. It looks really good.
Yeah, it looks really good, but I wonder if how much Oprah is doing for herself, and you know, is she going to have all these assistants doing it for her? And you know, while she's home, are these assistants following her home and making these meals for her? Or she has a chef at home? And she in the past, again, has lost weight and gained it back. But how much is she doing for herself, and how much are her people doing it for her? You know, and if they're not doing it for her, is she going to cook those meals, those healthy meals for herself?
Well, I agree. She's probably not cooking her meals herself. But the thing is, when she has other people helping her out all the time, she went through some horrible diets that really did not help the public by following what she did and then tried to emulate her. I remember that 1,000 calorie a day, that meal replacement shake that she went on when she lost all of that weight, you know, years and years ago. And that was her big success story. But that was horrible for the rest of the public. Even if the people are doing all of the work for her, she's doing it right. And if people follow what she's doing here, it's just awesome.
Yeah, so it does sound like, you know, those meals look like they're something that, well, in particular, oatmeal and egg whites. That is very similar to what you're eating, but all she needs is a little bit of ketchup.
That's right. Now, she says she loves oatmeal with egg whites, but not together. Well, I put them together. It's the same food. It's great. That's my perfect breakfast, and she's following it. She must be listening to the show, I think.
I think that's it.
Well, let's move on to our second clip.
Bottom line is you have to plan your meals, because if you don't plan your meals, you end up getting hungry and I end up going over here if I don't plan. And this becomes my drug of choice. Blue chips. Blue chips.
So Oprah there, if she's not planning out her snacks and she's going to be eating some junk food. And I think we talked about that last show or two, about planning out your snacks and bring them to the office and getting healthy snacks. Because if you don't, you're going to eat whatever junk is in the office. And there she is. She pulled out a bag of these blue corn tortilla chips, which are very bad for you.
And like she said, the goal is never to be hungry. If you're eating the 6 meals a day like she is, you're not really hungry. And if you're eating all of this wholesome, healthy food, there's a lot of food in there. You know, the natural food, there's a lot of bulk to it. You're not going to be that hungry if you're eating just really good, unprocessed stuff.
Yep, I think she's got the right idea there, keeping herself in a satisfied state with her 6 meals.
That's right. Her food plan right now is awesome. Well, let's move on to the next clip.
Realize that there is absolutely no way that I'm going to be able to ever, ever maintain my weight without some regular cardio exercise. So what I've done is actually change up my exercise this year so that I do less cardio and more resistance training. But this is a...
So I think it's awesome. Oprah is now, instead of just diet alone, which, you know, diet gets you a good portion of the way, but it will not get you all the way to your goals. You need to do resistance training and cardio. And, you know, it's great. Again, she's getting some good advice from her people.
And it's good to see that she's actually realized that the only way to succeed is to actually start exercising. She almost comes across as a person who is an all or nothing sort of person. And I know with her lifestyle, she has a radio show and she has all these meetings throughout the day and the television show. She has a super busy day, and it will be so easy for her to let exercise just fall to the wayside because she is just so busy.
Yeah, she needs to keep that exercise time blocked out on the schedule, and you know, no matter what, just get to that part. Once you skip it and one day, and all of a sudden it seems to just fall by the wayside. Like you have so many goals. You don't think about the goals. You don't do the exercise. And all of a sudden one day, a month later, you're not doing any exercise.
That's right. Well, let's move on to the last clip here. She's going to talk a little bit more about the actual resistance training that she's doing.
Enjoy. Can I say enjoy is resistance training? Yes. Working with weight. What I find is that the older you get, the more muscle you lose and need to try and maintain. And so for me, doing resistance training has proved to be really fascinating because I can see, even though the weight isn't dropping as I would like it to, I can see actually that my shape is changing, is getting firmer, and the clothes are getting looser, and that's all because of the weights.
So with this clip, I think she finally has it. She really gets it that it's not really how much you weigh, it's how you fit inside your clothing and how you look. And she now realizes that resistance training gives you the shape of your body that you want. It's not all about the weight.
Yeah, so we've talked in the past about as time goes by, you get to age, what was it, Jeff? You have to remind me now, 30 years old, and you'll naturally lose about 5 pounds, was it, of muscle every year? I'm trying to remember all the numbers.
Yeah, it actually says after age 30, you lose 6 pounds of muscle every decade.
Oh, every decade. Okay, there you go.
So that's a little over a 0.5 pound every year after age 30 that you lose in lean body mass.
So yeah, so as Oprah has gotten older here and she's done this yo-yo dieting stuff, her lean body mass, that muscle has dwindled. And now she's going to find it harder to lose the weight unless she really hits those weights.
That's right, because it's your lean body mass, your core muscles throughout your body that burns all of your calories throughout the day. It has the biggest impact really on how many calories you can eat throughout the day without gaining weight. And if you naturally lose muscle as you get older, you need to lift weights, not to get huge and bulky, but really just to maintain what you have and keep your metabolism going as you get older. But all in all, I think Oprah really has it together. And if she can keep up with this plan and actually change her lifestyle, be eating all of these smaller meals with a lean protein in every meal, eating healthy, having snacks throughout the day so she's never hungry, and keeping up with the cardio and the resistance training, there's no way that she can't succeed. Well, let's move on to our next email. And the next email comes in from Kalissa. And she writes, I was watching The Biggest Loser, and I was wondering how they lose so much weight in 1 week. Is it because they have so much weight and it's easier for them, or are they doing something that we don't know about? We've talked about The Biggest Loser and how they do some of their tricks in the past, but I did find a current story just from a couple weeks ago from their nutritionist that talks about all of the little things that they're doing. So I will leave a link in the show notes, but the basics are pretty simple.
Yes, according to their nutritionist, they eat about 4 cups of fruit and vegetables, mostly vegetables, lots of lean protein like turkey and chicken without the skin, egg whites, they have red meat occasionally, and lots of dairy products. And the typical woman in the competition eats 1,200 calories. It's quite low. The largest men may start at 2,400 calories, and they eat 3 meals a day and 2 snacks per day.
What they're actually eating is quite healthy. You know, eating lots of fruit and vegetables, lean protein with every meal, that's healthy. The main problem here is they're not eating enough food. For every person on the show, they're eating below their basal metabolic rate. And if they didn't have all of the support on the show, the doctors, etc., which we'll talk about in a second, there's no way they could really do this. And this is a weight loss competition. It's not about health. It's about winning money and getting the weight off. But let's move on to what they're actually doing when they work out.
Yes, their workout is up to 5-hour training sessions per day. That's burning at least 2,000 calories, and that's mainly cardio. The goal is to burn as many calories per day. All of the weightlifting and chin-ups and et cetera that you see on the show is mainly just for the cameras. They are simply spending hours and hours on ellipticals, stair climbers, bikes, and treadmills at kind of a moderate level of intensity to keep their large muscles moving this hour after hour. You know, they don't want to get injured, so they're taking it slow and or to medium, and but just long hours, 5-hour training sessions per day. That's with a personal trainer, but a lot of times they come back for another couple hours during the evening as well. And the only other person I've heard of that trains like this is an Olympic athlete. You know, when watching the Olympics, we learned about Michael Phelps, and he's in the pool for 5, 6, 7 hours a day, and he's burning just so many calories, but he is eating 7,000, 8,000 calories, and they are consuming 12 to 2,400. I mean, you can see the problem with this.
I think the biggest thing about training this hard is keeping yourself from being injured. The people who come on the show, they have not been training for years and years and have built up to this level of intensity like Michael Phelps. They are untrained individuals and they're just doing whatever they can to try and burn calories. I know I've been flipping channels and I see on a lot of the shows, people are wearing knee braces and all these tensor bandages around body parts that are just injured from overuse injuries.
Yeah, so could a real person do this, Jeff?
I would say absolutely not. First of all, they have daily medical supervision, and they will be getting all sorts of injections such as potassium and vitamins to try and keep them somewhat healthy as they're really going through this starvation diet. And with all of the injuries that they're possibly sustaining, without all of this sports therapy support, such as massage therapists and other treatments, no untrained person could withstand these workouts without strains and just tons of overuse injuries. And another thing, without all of this psychological help that they have here, mentally, no one could withstand this sort of intensity to all of a sudden turn around and do this much exercise on that little food. You couldn't psychologically stand it for more than a week or two. And there's most likely many other secrets that they're using that they're not talking about because they're clearly unhealthy and unsafe. I remember an interview with one of the winners a few years back. I think it was season two. And the two final contestants were talking about using diuretics, laxatives, and spending hours and hours in the sauna the day before the final weigh-in to lose just as much water weight as they can for the final weigh-in, trying to win this money. So it was not about health at the very end there. It was just about a competition to get the weight off. I mean, someone with long hair could probably cut off all of their hair and save, you know, half a pound if they had long hair. Crazy stuff like that. They're just trying to win a competition. It's not about the health.
And then there's the time involved and how many people could spend 5+ hours just working out. I mean, I go to work. I am working 9 hours a day. I'm sleeping 6+ hours. I try to get more. 3/4 of my day is taken up by other things. And then there's family time and being with the people that you love. And so 5+ hours in a gym, I don't think that that's possible in the real world for somebody to do. I mean, unless it is a full-time job, and then you can spend that kind of time. But for most other people, I think it's fairly impossible.
Well, I would say it is pretty much the opposite best way to lose weight. Everything in moderation. They're doing good things. They're eating healthy, but just not enough calories. They're working out, but just way too much. You tone the stuff down, and it is fairly healthy. But the way that they're going at it right now, this is just horrible. This is how you lose a lot of weight quickly, but this is how you lose all of that weight by losing muscle mass. We talked about earlier how your muscles take a lot of energy every day just to be there because your muscles are always using up calories. If you start to starve and you're working out hard, your body says, hey, these muscles are spending all of this energy. Let's get rid of these muscles so there's not as much of a demand on the body to burn calories. So they start digesting your own muscles. So your body starts burning less calories every single day. And by the end of this, yeah, you've lost a lot of weight, but you can never eat the same amount of food that you should be able to eat at that weight because you've lost all that muscle mass. And yes, you have a certain lower weight, but your metabolism has just been brutalized by the time you get to the end.
Yeah, I think the irony is, you know, only one person can win and the rest of them just get 15 minutes of fame. And while that one person wins the grand prize and money and fame and such, but I'm going to guess a lot of the other contestants will over time, you know, gain that weight back.
And I think the only ones that they've been showing on the show who are keeping it off, they're still earning income from the Biggest Loser franchise. You know, as their pictures appear on the related Biggest Loser products, they're still getting paid. So they have a financial incentive to keep the weight off. Real world, no one's going to keep it off. The faster you lose the weight, the quicker you put it back on.
All right. Well, we have a third item this week here in the email and comments, and it is from AJ. And she writes, hi, Russ and Jeff. My name is AJ, and I'm a student at the University of Texas in Austin. I've been listening to your show since the summer, and I love it. I have a question for you guys. One of my New Year's resolutions is to run a total of 1,000 miles throughout all my workouts this year. I calculated that I need to run 4 miles 5 times a week to reach this goal. The past few months, I've been running 3 miles per workout, and moving up to 4 miles has been no problem. But I started to wonder if running 4 miles 5 times a week is good for me. Is 40 minutes of cardio 5 times a week too much, especially if complemented with 20 or 30 minutes of resistance training per workout? Am I working my body too hard? While I would love to challenge myself to accomplish this ambitious goal, I don't want to overwork my body and prevent weight loss. My other resolution is to lose 20 pounds. Am I running a risk by running so much? Thanks for your help. Love the show. AJ, now, Jeff and I kind of read this email at the same time, and as I was reading this email, my knees were aching. You know, is AJ working her body too hard?
Well, she may or may not be working too hard. It depends how long she's been running and if she had a really long ramp. Now, the ramp means that you start really easy and you gradually get harder and harder. So running has a very high probability of injury the more that you push yourself. The problem when you set goals like this, and this may be a very achievable goal for you, I can't tell, but the problem with setting a goal of trying to do like 1,000 miles or 2,000 miles in a year, you may stop listening to your body because you can get so focused on this big goal that you end up injured because you're not listening to minor, you know, injuries and pains that you might feel in your legs. But depending on your genetics and how many months or years you have been running, you may be able to do this. You can't really tell if you're going to become injured from running until you're actually running. And the reason that running has a lot of injuries is because it has such a limited range of motion and it uses the exact same muscles over and over again. And that's how these overuse injuries develop. So my main concern with one big goal like this, the 1,000 miles, is that you need a fallback position. By all means, go for it. But the worst thing that could happen to you is if you do get injured, you might just give up the whole year and say, oh, I didn't do my 1,000 miles this year, and you give up exercising. I personally would expand my goals to include other forms of cardio just in case. So if it takes you 40 minutes to run 4 miles on average, find other things that you could do for 40 minutes, such as an elliptical trainer, biking, stair climbing, hiking, etc. And what this is going to do, even if you slightly modify your goal, you reduce the risk of injury by using different muscles every day doing different types of cardio. Now, as for 40 minutes of cardio and 20 to 30 minutes of resistance training, 5 times a week being too much, I would say no for you because you've already been working out and already have a base of fitness. I wouldn't recommend this for someone who hasn't been to the gym in years to start up like this, but as long as you always give yourself these at least 2 rest days a week and change up your workouts on a regular basis, you'll be fine. One last thing. If you're working out this hard and you only eat slightly less, something like 200 calories less per day, keep up those workouts, as I said, you're going to easily lose 20 pounds of pure fat and no muscle throughout the year. So good luck.
All right. I want to thank Jillian and Kalissa and AJ for sending in those great questions. If you'd like to get your question answered or send us a comment, there are a few ways to do that. The first one is to leave a comment over on the website at fat2fitradio.com.
Or you can send us an email to podcast@fattofitradio.com.
The third way is the often ignored voicemail. You can click on the call me button over on fat2fitradio.com and leave us a free voicemail.
Or you can join our support group at fattofitsupport.com.
All right, now let's get into a couple of news items on the web report. What do you got for us, Jeff?
The article that I have this week comes from Newsweek, and it's entitled The Worst Diet Fads, and it lists the top 6. Number 1 was the fat-free diet. Now, this was a theory back in the 80s that if you eat fat, you will get fat, and you can eat anything you want as long as it doesn't have fat in it. But, you know, in reality, that's why people got so fat in the last 20 years. The next one, the snack pack diet. This is actually pretty recent. The theory is that cookies and chips in 100-calorie packs are okay to eat because they're only 100 calories. The reality is there's no nutritional value in junk food. There's no fiber. There's no vitamins. So you're just eating junk food but in smaller sizes. Number 3 is the couch potato diet. These are diets that say you can lose weight without exercising. Yeah, I guess you can lose a couple pounds, but in reality, the studies show time after time again that dieters who change what they eat and increase exercise keep off the weight. Number 4 in the diet fads that are just bad, the detox diet plans. The theory is you'll lose weight when you clean out your insides by downing a concoction made from orange juice, molasses, or some other bizarre mix. The reality is there's absolutely no evidence that getting rid of these supposed toxins will make you any healthier or help you lose weight. We're just getting down to the last 2 worst diet fads, and the second last one is the beef and bacon diet. This is talking about all protein all the time. This is your typical Atkins diet. In reality, cutting down on carbs might help you lose a little bit more weight if you take out the white flour and the white rice. But in reality, you're losing so many vitamins and minerals by just relying on too much protein. And the worst one here, they called it the Twinkie diet. The theory behind this is that calories are all that counts. So eat whatever you want, including nothing but Twinkies if you want, and you will lose weight as long as your total is under your daily limit. Now, we talk about people's BMRs and figuring out how many calories you should be eating every day, but really, calories do count, calories in versus calories out, but all food is not created equal, and if you're not getting any vitamins or nutrients or protein, you're really not going to end up healthy. You might lose some weight, but it's going to kick you in the butt in the long run. So those are the top six worst diet fads, and I'm sure we've all heard about them and even tried maybe half or almost all of them in the past. I know I have. So there it is. If you want to read this in detail, I'll leave a link in the show notes that goes right to Newsweek, and you can read the entire article. So Russ, what do you have for us this week?
Well, you know, we've already talked about not snacking at the office in last week's show. So this week I found this article. It was over at health.com. It is 5 tips to keep office snacking from derailing your diet. And so there's have a few tips here that help you keep away from those snacks. The first one is sage advice here, pack your own snack. You know, if you've got your own snack, even while other people's are snacking on the bad things, you can snack right along, but you have your own healthy snack. So you don't have to participate in the food. You can participate in the camaraderie and the just hanging out with your coworkers. The second one is, they mention here, invest your calories wisely. They're likening a diet to balancing your checkbook. You need to hold yourself accountable for the calories you spend. One bite of a cupcake isn't going to kill you, but eating a whole one every day will make the numbers on the scale soar. So, you know, just want to balance that, you know, have a little bite, you know, it's not going to really won't hurt you, but know that, you know, you can't have that. If you do have that cupcake, you can't have that giant meal later on. And so you just keep it all in balance. Third one is don't graze. It says here, on the days you choose a high-cal office treat, be vigilant about how much you're shoveling into your mouth. A sliver of cake will seem pretty measly portioned out onto a big paper plate, and studies show that you're much more likely to go overboard and load up on seconds or thirds if your brain doesn't think that you're getting enough. Talks about a little study here at Cornell University about the size of plates that the study is talking about. If you have a bigger plate, you'll eat 30% more than others with smaller plates. So go for that small plate and put a portion on there, and that's it. And don't go back for more and more, or try to fill up that large plate. Fourth one here is sip something warm. Instead of having the chocolate chip cookies, you know, get yourself a nice cup of tea or a cup of coffee, and you're going to get a lot less calories. And, you know, it's also like a treat. And the fifth one, final one here, is choose the weightier option. If the calorie content is relatively the same, always choose a treat that weighs more. Yeah, so the mention here, reaching for pretzels and cheese instead of potato chips, because even if the portion sizes are similar, you'll end up feeling much fuller with the heavier snack. So some pretty good advice there from health.com. This article will be linked over in the show notes as well.
I really agree with that last one, choose the weightier option. That's really the big reason why I eat oatmeal in the morning, simply because it's really heavy. I mean, I eat probably more than a pound of food in the morning for 300 and some calories, and it really fills me up. So eating something that's heavy, at least for me, that really makes a lot of sense.
Well, all right, it's going to do it for the web report, and let's move on to our feature section for this week.
All right, I'm going to talk about a book called In Defense of Food, An Eater's Manifesto by Michael Pollan. Now, this book has been on the New York Times bestseller list for quite a while, and I've heard quite a lot of good things about it. So over the last few weeks, I gave it a thorough read. I've read many nutrition books and diet books over the last few years, and they all seem to be very convincing when you read them. But when you read the next one, it all seems to contradict everything that you were just impressed about in the last one. The thing that I really wonder about is, how does the average person have any idea about what to believe? Most of these books that I have read are written by nutritionists or doctors or personal trainers and seem to use a lot of science and studies to back up what they're saying, but they all can't be right. Now, this book, In Defense of Food, takes this on. It's really not a diet book. It's a book that really describes how our society has really messed up everything about food and how to fix it for the average person. Michael Pollan doesn't claim to be an expert. He just wrote this manifesto on research and what he calls authority of tradition and common sense. It's a fairly readable book, and it turned out to have a ton of great lines throughout it that have really resonated with me. I pretty much destroyed my book by underlining and marking pages as I was reading. So here is the book in a nutshell. The main line about how to eat is simply this: eat food, not too much, mostly plants. So simple, but people really can't seem to do this. The big thing about eating food is that most of the food that we see in the supermarket is not what he considers real food. Most of the processed packaged food he considers as edible food-like substances. I think that is a great line. Another great line is that if you're concerned about your health, you should avoid all food-like products that make any health claims. The healthiest and most nutritious foods don't come with health claims on them. He sees that the downfall of our health in our Western society stems from both the manufacturers of foods and also the rise of nutrition science itself. So for example, in 1938 in the US, when processed foods were starting to appear, a law was passed that the word imitation had to appear on these food products that looked like real foods but were not. Then in 1973, the FDA changed the law to state that as long as the food products had the same nutritional content as the original foods, they no longer had to use the word imitation. The problem is, the nutritional content only referred to the macronutrients, protein, fats, and carbohydrates. But if you think about it, fruit has a lot of carbs, but so does sugar. So you can make candy with the same proportion of macronutrients as an apple, but everybody knows they are not the same nutritionally. At the same time, our nutrition science began studying the macronutrients in isolation, and food simply became the combination of those nutrients. They took the nutrients out of the food, the foods out of our diets, and then took the diets out of our lifestyles. So their findings about a nutrient might be accurate, but no longer were people getting advice about what foods to actually eat. They were given advice about which macronutrients to eat or to avoid. In 1977, the U.S. Dietary Guidelines changed to tell people to eat more low-fat foods. This is exactly what people did, and they started to get fatter and fatter. People became fat-phobic, and instead of eating foods that were low in fat, they started eating all of the processed foods that were higher in sugar instead. The food industry started creating foods like low-fat cookies that everyone thought they could eat as many as they wanted because they were low in fat. Then later, when carbohydrates started to become the bad guy, they started creating things like low-carb beer that was supposed to all of a sudden be healthy. He contends that all of this science has actually paralyzed the average person, so that there is so much contradictory messages out there that the average person has no idea how to eat healthy anymore. I've talked about this on the show all the time. It's paralysis by analysis. There's just too much information going both ways, so people just give up. But anyways, the second half of the book offers a lot of practical advice. And here's just a couple little tidbits from the book. Number one, don't eat anything that your great-grandmother wouldn't recognize as food. That just makes a lot of common sense. Another one, avoid foods containing ingredients that are unfamiliar, unpronounceable, or more than five items in the ingredients themselves. Another one we talked about at the beginning, avoid any products that make health claims. They're obviously processed foods that are trying to turn it around to make themselves healthy. Now, the last one that I'm going to share with you is very interesting. He said, be like the kind of person who takes supplements. But he didn't say to take any supplements, though. He found that there's many studies that show that people who take supplements are healthier than the general public. But the studies showed that it had nothing to do with the supplements or the pills themselves. It really had to do with those people are just more health conscious, eat better, and have a more active lifestyle than the general public. So be that kind of person, but save your money at the health food store. I thought that was really interesting, some really good common sense. So I've covered what the book is about, and I personally agree with a large portion of it, but not all of the book. My big thing about learning about health and nutrition when I'm reading books and articles is that if I get one or two good pieces of information out of it that I can personally use, that's awesome and it was worth it. I've given away a lot of the book already, but if this sounds interesting, by all means, you know, find it at the library, borrow it from a friend and read it. It's actually pretty good. Right now, I just checked on the New York Times bestseller list and it's still at number 20, so it has some legs to it. So what do you think, Russ?
Well, I'm going to take away two things from this book, even though I have not read it myself. First one, don't eat anything that your grandmother wouldn't recognize as food. Now, my grandmother is 92 years old, and I'm going to guess she's cooked 90% of her meals. She's not a big person for going out. Maybe that's the reason why she's lived to 92 and is in great shape. So that's number one. Number two, I enjoyed listening to you say edible food-like substances. And that's what he calls, you know, these imitation foods. And gosh, you know, they're processed micronutrients that are, you know, put into a mold and then called food. That's not something I want to put in my body. I want to put in something that's natural, that's grown in from the ground, that's harvested and something that I can recognize as, you know, from its constituent parts. I don't want to just look at it and go, it's some, you know, fructose corn syrup and whatever it is. That's really the big one I'm taking away from this one.
Well, this book also had an impact on me. I talk about that I eat a lot of egg whites. And what I would do is just buy regular cartons of eggs and I'd take out the yolks myself and keep the egg whites. And it was a lot of labor to do that. So I switched over to just buying cartons of egg whites. Yeah, there's a little bit of processing and I don't really have any idea how they do it. But then lately, about a month ago, I discovered egg beaters, which were cartons of egg whites, you know, with their flavoring and everything in them right beside where I'd normally pick up my other cartons of egg whites. And they cook a lot better than pure egg whites, and they're a lot fluffier, and they're flavored. They're really good. And then I looked on the side of the carton of these egg beaters, and yeah, there's way more than 5 products. I can't pronounce half of the things in them, and it's all full of just crap. So I think I'm going to have to go back to these egg whites. You see egg beaters all the time offered in restaurants as the healthy alternative for omelets. And yes, it is healthier than just pure eggs, but I really don't want to eat that much processing and flavoring and things that I don't really understand. So I'm back to egg whites. I'm going to make it a little bit easier than shelling the eggs myself. I'm going to stick with the cartons, but it really made an impact. And after I finished the book and I read those ingredients, like I said, I just can't eat that kind of stuff, you know, at least for a couple of weeks anyways. But speaking of food, let's move into the recipe of the week.
Right. So I was all ready to give you all some Super Bowl party recipes that were healthy. But tonight my wife made couscous, and she put vegetables in it and some chicken broth, and it was delicious. So I thought, you know what? I want to give you a couscous recipe. So I found one over at about.com. It is sun-dried tomato basil couscous, and it looks delicious from the ingredients that I'm reading here. Scallions, sun-dried tomatoes, garlic, the couscous, basil. I mean, it just looks great. But I'm also going to give you the link in the show notes to the Super Bowl recipes, because when you have those guests over to your house for a Super Bowl party, better to serve them a healthy snack instead of just these really fat laden things that we normally eat, Cheetos and chips and a guacamole or something, you know, whatever it is. Get those out of there and check out these recipes for a healthy alternative that you can feel good about serving to your guests. So again, both those links for the couscous recipe, which is awesome, and then also to all list of football Super Bowl recipes will also be in the show notes.
You'll have to correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't couscous actually a pasta, even though it looks like really fine rice?
It is. It looks like little balls of pasta. And I normally don't eat pasta. If I'm trying to eat healthy, I know, like, pasta is the first thing off my list. You know, it's one of those, when you normally you get someone's white flour things. But I looked at the package and I thought, oh, this is actually a very good food. So I wanted to add it back in and I had it tonight and it was delicious. So I wanted to share with everybody. But enough of that. What is our homework for this week, Jeff?
Well, the homework this week is to take an inventory of the foods in your kitchen to see how much real food you're actually eating and how much of this food is just food-like products. So look for the following. Any product that has a health claim, lists any ingredients that you can't pronounce or identify, or lists more than 5 ingredients total. Those are the food-like products. So what percentage of foods that you eat throughout the day are not really food, but processed food-like substances? It'll be a little bit of an eye-opener. Just go into your kitchen, start looking at the things that you normally eat.
Very good. I'm going to do that. And what is our quote for this week?
The quote this week comes from Randy Posh, and he wrote, "Too many people go through life complaining about their problems. I've always believed that if you took 1/10 of the energy you put into complaining and put it into solving the problem, you'd be surprised how well things can work out."
Very nice. Very nice. I want to thank everybody again for participating in the show by sending a comment or a question. All the links to everything we mentioned on today's show will be over at the website fat2fitradio.com. We will talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Send your feedback or questions to podcast@fattofitradio.com. For more information on today's show or any previous shows, visit the website at fattofitradio.com. If you would like to support the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast directory.